The University Dropout. Given that I had decided, or more accurately, it was decided on my behalf that I was no longer going to be a pilot, I had to start thinking about another career. One of the advantages of spending 18 months on the Southwest African border was that you had ample time on your hands to think. I can't quite remember exactly when I came to the life-shattering decision that I would become a chartered accountant, but I can assure you that this decision was not brought about as a consequence of smoking some special blend in the bush. Sadly, I've never been able to smoke, so I've never been able to enjoy the alternative dimensions of thought that can be induced by smoking some of Durban's finest poison. As I've said earlier, during my school days, I always tried to be one of the boys. So in Standard 6, Grade 8, I joined Billy Russell, who lived around the corner, for my first peer-induced smoke in his parents' caravan, which was parked in their garden. With the benefit of experience, I've always wondered why he chose that confined location to puff away in, as his parents did not smoke, and surely they would have been able to smell it a mile away. I tried a few puffs and then inhaled. Boy, oh, did it taste terrible, and besides choking my lungs out, Billy had to help me put my eyeballs back in their sockets. After a couple of puffs, I gave up and decided that there were other ways of proving that you were a man. Thus, the possibility of me and sweet Mary Jane ever hooking up became an impossibility. Lots of people have, on different occasions, suggested I should try eating those special cookies, but they can't be the same as the real thing. What does not make sense to me about eating cookies rather than smoking? Is the phase during which you supposedly get really hungry after smoking the weed? How can you get really hungry after scoffing so many cookies? The only comparison that comes to mind is the sex versus masturbation alternative. Both end up with the same result, but which is the more enjoyable? Get the picture? It seems my mind is wandering somewhat. I started on the topic of a career as an accountant and ended up discussing the merits of marijuana. I'm not quite sure what they have in common, but perhaps if accountants were forced to smoke it, they would no longer wear grey suits and shoes. So I decided that after my paid vacation in foreign lands, I would go to university to study for a BCom, Bachelor of Commerce degree, and then move on to qualify as a CA. Why do they call it a bachelor's degree? I know many married people who have graduated with this degree. I'd always taken accountancy as a subject in school and had always obtained a distinction for the subject. My parents were happy about my choice and they were willing to pay for my university education. Now, in those days, this was substantially more expensive than school fees, unlike today, where it is the reverse due to the wonderful education system prevailing in South Africa. But no, in typical me fashion, I decided that I was going to pay for my studies. I'm not sure why I'd taken this stance, besides being stubborn. A trade that I have managed to excel at for most of my life. Perhaps, if the truth be told, as kids, my sister, brother, and I have lived our lives being constantly reminded by our parents how much they've done and sacrificed for us. So it might have been me rebelling, or perhaps it was just me deciding that I was now more than able to look after myself. So I decided that with the huge savings I'd accumulated in Southwest Africa, with my normal pay as well as my danger pay allowance, I would fund my first year of study and either obtain a student loan or a bursary for the remaining years. And so, in early 1981, I became a full-time student at WITS, University of the Witwatersrand. My early experiences of university were quite mixed, having come from a disciplined military environment. I enjoyed the freedom of doing what I wanted, when I wanted. If I decided not to go to a lecture, I didn't have to go, and nobody gave a damn. I could work as hard as I wanted, and I could party whenever I wanted. I do, however, recall that I was somewhat frustrated by the immaturity of most of the first-year students. During the years of conscription, you could apply for a postponement in order to complete your tertiary education. and the vast majority of young males, I hesitate to call them men, chose to study first and get shot at later. Perhaps they were hoping that conscription would be reduced in time, which a few years later it was, to 1 year, the lucky bastards. Perhaps they thought that if they were educated, they could become commissioned officers and get a desk job at a military base close to home. Their wise choice to study first was to my detriment, as, given my recent experiences, I found almost all of them extremely young and immature. I had graduated from being a shy, reticent kid to a shy, reticent man, with a you-kids-know-nothing-about-life attitude. And who said that the army gave you nothing in return? I suppose the first sign that I wasn't destined to become an accountant was when my huge savings account became depleted after a couple of months. This wasn't entirely my fault, as I'd been taken away from civilian life for a period of 2 years, and in this period I had no idea of how expensive things had become. I'm not sure of the official government-published statistics for inflation at that time, but I am pretty sure that it was rampant. This is assuming that any government-published fact is believable, of course. Probably my free-of-charge helicopter flight had played a small part in this, but things were clearly pricier than I had first counted on. So there I was, a 20-year-old man with a bright future ahead of me, but almost broke, and not for the last time in my life either. Upon hearing my financial challenges, my parents were quick to say they would be glad to assist, but I did mention that I was stubborn. No problem, here I was, a war veteran who was going to be successful, so which bank wouldn't want to be part of me? On campus they had a Standard Bank branch, so I completed and submitted my student loan application. A few days later, I returned, and they had advised me that my application had been approved, subject to my father signing surety for the loan. I asked them who they thought was going to repay the loan. Without any assistance from me, they got the answer right and acknowledged that I was going to be the responsible person. So my next obvious question was, so why must my dad sign? They proceeded to explain that, as I was not 21 years of age, that legally I had to have an adult sign surety. So there it was out in the open. I was legally forced by the government to spend 2 years of my life defending my country, and in my particular case, before I could even get a driver's license, yet, after doing my part, they had this pathetic law that clearly indicated that I was not responsible enough to sign a legal contract to repay a pitiful student loan. What transpired next was a battle of the wits. Excuse the pun, Wits University had nothing to do with this. Mine versus the might of Standard Bank, one of the largest banking institutions in our country. I gave them an ultimatum. Either they grant me the loan on my own merits, or they would never enjoy a cent of my money, ever. I would like to believe that they seriously considered this offer, but sadly the branch staff are just mere employees following instructions, just like I had to in the army. So I lost the battle. In fact, worse than that, I lost my ability to continue my studies, as I was not prepared to run back to my parents with my tail between my legs. For the record, I want to state that although I lost the battle, Standard Bank never, ever won the war. To this day, I have never banked with them. I refuse to go to their ATMs if I need to draw money, and they have never had the opportunity to share my little successes. I bet that if the board of directors of the bank knew this at the time, they would certainly have lost some sleep over it. I was now 20 years old and on a career roll. I had scored 0 out of 2 in terms of career choices. I was going to be neither a pilot nor an accountant, but I wasn't duly concerned, as I was a mature, intelligent individual who was going places. At that stage, I just wasn't sure where they were. Lessons learned. 18. If you have the opportunity to take advantage of a sponsored tertiary education, either from your parents or a bursary, then do so. Do not let petty stubbornness get in the way. but you then have to give it your best shot. 19. As a young person, despite your confidence, you may not always choose the best or most appropriate career options. That is okay, but you must persevere until you finally get it right. My Career, Part 1. During my time at university, I had a part-time job on Saturdays and during my holidays at a men's clothing store in the city centre. I informed the owner that I was now a dropout, and I made sure that he understood that it was entirely Standard Bank's fault. In fact, I remember inquiring whether the store banked with him, as I have no doubt that I would have made it my mission to ensure that the account was closed if they did. Fortunately for Standard Bank, they banked with the opposition. Standard Bank would learn to regret their mistakes. Because I was a pretty good salesman, the enlightened management of the store saw their opportunity and grasped it with both hands, and I had my first full-time job. I saw this as a transition period during which I would evaluate my options and get some direction as to where I was headed. The next 2 months were spent peddling clothes and studying the jobs advertised in the classified sections of the daily newspapers. Finally, I identified something that looked interesting to me. The advert stated that the company was looking for a salesman of about 25 years of age, with experience, to sell accounting machines and computers. Now, you have to put this into context. In 1981, the microcomputer was only being born. This looked like a winner to me, and the fact that I was only 20 and had no experience was not important, at least not in my mind. I applied for the position at the personnel agency, and they made an appointment for me to meet with them. In those days, you got to meet the personnel agent, and then you presented them with your CV at the first meeting. Poor buggers. No wonder they've changed their approach. In fact, I think they now use the term screening to make their days more pleasant and no doubt more productive. During my interview, the personnel agent was somewhat surprised at my CV or lack thereof, not to mention that I was applying for this position. She politely inquired as to my knowledge of computers, and being the honest person that I am, I told her that I knew exactly nothing about them, but that I was a fast learner. She was quite diplomatic in her efforts to dethwart my focus from this position, as I was only 20 and had no experience. She was, in fact, very encouraging about some other positions that I should apply for, given my considerable CV that I had to offer. I was not about to let up on this opportunity. Call it youthful exuberance, or perhaps it was confidence that I had developed, having honed my selling skills by peddling clothes full-time. I decided that it was time to go on the attack, so I asked her how she could support a theory that said an experienced 25-year-old could be more successful than me at this job. Where exactly was her mind? She had a wishy-washy response that had something to do with experience, blah, 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 blah. What the innocent lady didn't count on was my next pitch, which went something along the lines of, "Well, if you don't allow me the opportunity to meet with the company and allow them to be the judge of my potential, how will I ever manage to gain any experience in this field?" I knew I had her when she uttered, "Okay. The personnel manager of this large company is a personal friend of mine, so I will do you a favor by introducing you to him on one condition. You will meet him not for an interview for this particular position, but to allow him to determine whether you have an aptitude for computers as a career." Bingo! I was on my way, but I had one last question. "Which company does he work at?" "Olivetti," she replied. My appointment was set up for later in the week. I knew I had to prepare myself, so I went to the public library and started to educate myself on computers. You know, bits and bytes and that sort of stuff. Nervous as all hell, I met with Paul Jansen at Olivetti. Clearly, he had been properly briefed by the personnel agent, as the first words that he uttered to me confirmed that I was not being interviewed for the position that I had applied for, but only as a favour to his lady friend. Not that this perturbed me in any way. I had evolved. I had my original sales pitch, and by now I had learned what the difference was between a bit and a bite. I had improved eightfold. He was one of the kindest, most polite people I have ever met. The poor man never knew what hit him. Eventually he agreed that I had every right to believe that I was capable of being successful in the job. He decided to invite me to their evaluation process, which entitled a battery of tests that lasted an entire day. He said that after this step, they would then be able to determine whether I had an aptitude for this computer stuff. Maybe it was also an easy out for him, because if I performed dismally, he could easily tell me to go back to selling clothes without feeling guilty. A couple of days later, I reported for my day of humiliation. I'd shot my mouth off, and now they were about to find out that the motor powering the mouth had more noise than grunt. Believe me, by the end of the day, I felt that my brain was fried and that I had embarrassed myself beyond acceptable levels. I was told that I would be called in a day or two to let me know what the next step was. I slunk back to the world I knew best at that stage, peddling clothes to those unfortunate and gullible people who did not know that they could not afford them. A couple of days later, a secretary called me and told me that I had an appointment with Paul the following day. I accepted, but I was hesitant to make the meeting because I had this nagging feeling that he wanted a personal confrontation, possibly to get his payback after my assertive sales pitch, which I had made him endure. I attended the meeting, but my body language was certainly a little different this time. He started slowly, explaining the nature of the tests and what they indicated, and then, without skipping a beat, he offered me a job as a computer programmer. Where was his mind at? He reiterated that my scores were extremely high for this field, and I had found my calling. "Programmers do not make money. I'm not interested," was my response. My body language had by now improved. The results were out, and I had not embarrassed myself well, not yet. I would like to be considered for the salesman's position. I wasn't giving up on this opportunity. I'm not sure if it was because he believed that I might succeed or because he felt the best way of dealing with me was to give one of his other colleagues the proverbial hospital pass and refer me to him. But nonetheless, I had made it to the next step. Robbie Abraham, national sales manager of Olivetti, was politely asked to evaluate a brash 20-year-old as a personal favour to Paul. By now I was learning how business worked. Everything seemed to be based on a personal favour. I met with Robbie and he liked me. He enjoyed my enthusiasm and he felt that I had what it took, so he referred me to the branch manager who ran the region with the vacancy. I met with Giovanni Mottolini and subjected him to my sales pitch. By this time I had it down pat. Eventually, after much deliberation, they contacted me and made me an offer. I could join on a 3-month probationary basis. They would give me a sales target that was the same as that of their most experienced salesman at the time. I was told that I would have to achieve the target in this period, and if I didn't, then that would be the end of my career at Olivetti. Gleefully, I accepted. What they had neglected to tell me was that they would only give me a couple of days' training, which at the time meant, here are the manuals for the equipment, read them and learn. Anyway, I reported for duty and set about trying to learn exactly what I was going to be selling. They assigned me a geographical territory, printed some business cards and left me to it. I remember sitting at my desk saying to myself that I had asked for this, so I'd best get on with it. Got into my car, drove to an industrial area and began selling. This meant going from door to door and trying to get to see any senior manager who would be prepared to give me 5 minutes of his time to allow me to publicly embarrass myself. I made a promise to myself that I would never lie to a customer or pretend that I knew something that I didn't. What did help was the strong name that Olivetti had back in those days. They were the leaders in accounting machines and solutions, so it was a natural progression for them to move into the personal computer or PC market. Without a shadow of a doubt, this was the most humiliating period of my life. Several times a day, I would be asked a question that I could not answer, even the basic ones like, "How much memory can your PC be upgraded to?" My typical response was, "Sir, I'm not sure of that, but I will check it out and get back to you." I soon became used to my embarrassing lack of knowledge, but I learned quickly. I also learned that my prospects respected my total honesty, and this made it easy for them to trust me. As soon as I had someone who was interested, I would call in Giovanni to help me. It was not long before I made my first sale with his help, and then another and another. I made my target before the 3-month period was up. I was given my formal letter of appointment. I had proved myself that with hard work I could achieve anything. Anything I set my mind to. I felt liberated. I worked for Olivetti for a year. At the end of the year, I was the second best performing salesman in the country. This was measured as your percentage achievement of your quota or target. Most importantly, I was enjoying myself. Giovanni was then offered a senior position at Barlow Microcomputers, a company within the Barlow Group, with which had the distribution rights for Panasonic PCs, and within a month he contacted me and offered me a sales position there. The pay was a lot higher, and it showed me that my previous branch manager believed in me, so I did not hesitate to accept the offer. Lessons learned. 20. If you really believe that you are capable of doing something, then you are. But nothing comes easy, so you have to work your hardest to achieve it. 21. Never lie about your knowledge or lack thereof, as the truth will always come out. 22. People will deal with you if they believe you are 100% trustworthy. So the objective is to get them to realize that as soon as possible. 23. Do not be afraid to embarrass yourself in a positive way in your pursuit to achieve success. Remember the old adage, no pain, no gain. 24. Never confuse confidence and arrogance. It is a fine line that separates the two.